Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, good evening. On behalf of the Tattered Cover Bookstore, it's my pleasure to welcome you and to thank you for joining us. Cindy Ratzliff and Kathy Kinney met doing children's theater at college and have been friends now for over 30 years. Cindy began her public relations and marketing career at Simon & Schuster Audio and Pocket Books and moved on to Rodale, where she served as associate publisher and vice president of brand marketing. She is now president of her own marketing and brand strategy firm, Brand New Brand You, and is founding partner at the social media firm Supreme Social Media. Kathy is best known for her role as Mimi on The Drew Carey Show. She's acted in over a dozen films and guest starred on numerous television shows and may currently be seen in a recurring role on the ABC family hit series, The Secret Life of the American Teenager. She's active with the USO and is currently co-producing a project for children on the internet aimed at furthering literacy. She may be seen in the title role of Mrs. P. But tonight, we are delighted that Cindy and Kathy are with us to present their new book, Queen of Your Own Life. Would you please join me in making them feel welcome?
Thank you.
Andy Richter.
We have this fantasy that we have a talk show and I'm Andy Richter. It's my fantasy, it's not hers.
I was going to say, it's Cindy's fantasy.
So I'll stand over here and go.
But we're really happy to be here and thank you for coming out to meet us. We're looking forward to talking to you when you pass by the table. And we think it's important that you understand that we are not therapists, although we did work at the American Psychiatric Association, but as secretaries. And I'm sure if you've been to any other of these type of book events, you've probably heard this excuse or reason before why someone wrote a book, and it was because my feet were hot at night. And I went to the internet to find out if it was fatal, because I kind of had that black and white thinking. And what I found when I went online was that now that I was at the midpoint in my life, I was a crone. A crone. And I thought, really at the time, I thought, well, maybe I just don't understand what crone means. I thought I did, and I looked it up. It meant exactly what I thought it meant. It was a derogatory term, still is. It's a derogatory term based on the French word carrion, which means dead flesh. And then I looked it up on the dictionary on my computer, and it said any woman over 40. Cindy and I go on these friendship renewal vacations that right now they're calling girlfriend getaways too, so it's kind of hip. But we have men who, in our lives, who either don't like to travel or don't like to travel with us. We're not certain. So I like to say that I've been to some of the most romantic cities in the world with Cindy. And at this time, we were actually meeting in Prague, which we both had always wanted to go to. We saved our money, and unfortunately, my schedule only allowed us to go in the beginning of December, but that's fine, because I live in LA, and I don't get any kind of festive anything, really, from that. So I met Cindy in Prague, and I gave her the bad news that we were crones.
I did not want to be one either, so.
No. And so there we are, sitting, overlooking the beautiful Charles River, and there's a big castle on on the hill, and we thought this: if man is king of the castle, does that make us the crone in the corner? And if it does, we don't want to be that crone. We wanted to be queen, queen of our own lives, and we wanted to have a crowning ceremony. We didn't want to have a croning ceremony. And now there may be some crones here, and you know there are a lot of women who embrace that, and we're, you know, whatever you want, that's what we want. But I'm telling you, women will tell you that, well, crone used to mean something different. But no, it always meant dead flesh. Okay?
Wrong.
Wrong?
It means wise elder woman.
Okay. Should. Who had dead flesh. All right? It's always been based on the French word carrion. So that's fine, because I would rather be called a wise old woman than a crone. That's just me. So we decided we didn't want to have a croning ceremony. We wanted to have a crowning ceremony. And there we were in Prague, and we based it on these two simple questions. What do you want to banish from the first half of your life that no longer works? And what do you want to keep or bring forward? What do you really like about yourself? And that was an interesting thing.
You know, it's so easy. What we found for ourselves was that very easy for us to come up with an epic list of things we wanted to banish from our lives. Things that we didn't think we did right, regrets we had, things we just didn't want to keep doing. But then when it came to building the list of what we wanted to keep, it was a little harder. You know, we're taught as women, you know, nice girls don't brag. We don't say nice things about ourselves. We're not in the habit of really looking at ourselves and saying, wow, I'm pretty incredible at that. And I had, this was all precipitated by the fact that I had just been laid off from my big hot job in publishing after 20 years, and I was feeling, I don't, like I'd gotten a body blow, I have to say. And, you know, I was whining to Kathy about, I just got so stupid. They would have kept me if I'd been smarter, if I'd worked harder, if it blah, blah, blah. You know, they wouldn't have kept me. They cut back 1,000 people in my industry in a week. But I couldn't, you know, but I kept taking it very personally. And so she kept saying, you need to see yourself the way I see you. You know, I see you this way because we've been friends for 35 years. So look in this mirror. I see the best of you. I see a remarkable woman who is still as courageous and brave and smart as she always was. You didn't get stupid overnight. You got laid off.
She kept saying to me, I wish I was that same courageous girl that sold my bike for $200 and left Minneapolis and moved to New York. And I said, you are. You are. And so we for 7 nights in Prague, and we said sometimes we were just drinking Pilsner and eating goulash, and sometimes we were drinking champagne and eating goose. But every single night, we asked each other these two questions and witnessed. And what we realized was that we both wanted to banish fear, fear of not being liked. Can you imagine anyone not liking us? But that was our fear. Fear of not being liked, fear of failing, fear of succeeding, all the basic fears. We had them. And the thing that we wanted to keep was our sense of humor and the sense of adventure that we'd always had. Well, when we left Prague, we were so empowered. And we live on opposite sides of the United States. And we told our friends, and they all, to a woman, said, I want that. I want that feeling that you have. And I want permission to celebrate entering the second half of my life, because we realized there were no true celebrations of that. Someone had thrown me a surprise party when I turned 40 that involved black balloons, a coffin-shaped cake, a basket full of Depends. And I was 40, and I thought, oh no. And so we said, God, there's celebration for everything. We have to have it. And that's when we came up with this crowning ceremony.
We decided we really needed a party. You know, we would ask ourselves the two questions, come up with the answers, feel cleansed and empowered, and then declare ourselves purposefully to be queen of our own lives. And just the very act of saying, I am queen of my own life, I admire myself, made me stand taller, made me feel better, and it did it to each and every one of the women we talked to. So we started having these little crowning ceremonies. One was, our first friend was just over tea and toast, you know, over breakfast. And then she invited a couple of friends, and then somebody else invited a couple of friends. Pretty soon we were crowning. We got to New York, and we did a big crowning ceremony with a bunch of television executives I used to work with in New York. And I was a little, I was really nervous about that one, because I thought, oh, they're so sophisticated. They'll think this is so dumb. And every one of them said the exact same thing. Fear of not being liked, fear of somebody finding out I'm not smart enough. They're brilliant. All the same things that all women, so many women that we talk to have, and all the same things that they wanted to take forward, almost to the woman. It was something that they had enjoyed about themselves when they were younger women, and that they had let fall to the wayside a little bit as life sort of took over and responsibilities took over. You know, a sense of adventure, a sense of humor, a love of music, whatever it was, they wanted to recapture that. And so we found suddenly that what we were doing seemed to have a universal feel to it, that it was really touching anybody we talked to, whether they were stay-at-home moms in Pennsylvania or high-powered business execs in New York. They all were telling us the exact same thing. Now, I came from book publishing, so after about our 20th one of these, I turned to Kathy and I went, I think this is a book. And so she said, okay, it might be a book, but it has to be easy. We can only work with people we like, and that's how we'll know if it's supposed to be a book. So we were going to throw it to the winds. So I called an agent that I used to work with when I was in book publishing, and I asked her that question that no agent who has friends wants to hear. I've written a book, and I really wonder if you'd take a look at it. And she was kind enough to say, yes, I'll take a look at it for you, just like that. And she called us back in 24 hours, and she said, oh, this is a book. This is absolutely a book, and it's fantastic. And it wasn't the whole book. It was a draft kind of thing. So I called Kathy, and I said, it was easy, and she's nice. So maybe this is a book. She took it to New York. We had a big auction. We met with 7 publishing houses. There was a big auction, and Harlequin won the auction. Now, I'll just tell you,
because this is my thing. You know, we wanted to be authors. we wanted to be with HarperCollins or Simon & Schuster. And yes, you know, there was a little bidding war, and I mean little, between Simon & Schuster. The weekend we arrived, the cover of the Sunday calendar thing was the death of publishing. And we were like, okay,
and our auction was the next day.
And next day. So we ended up, and I knew it would happen. We ended up, Harlequin won the bidding war, and we made the decision, and we went with them. And, you know, of course, the ego is involved in everything, and I was a little embarrassed. But to tell you the truth, you know, they have 8 million unique visitors every month to their website. And these are women who are college educated. And Harlequin had started a nonfiction division. We were going to be their second book. And we felt that we could really reach who we wanted to reach with this. Because when Cindy was talking about the crowning ceremony and how it just exploded, what happened from that, again, no matter who was there, was this sense that women are so supportive, and that at every one of the crowning ceremonies we had, there wasn't a single woman that wasn't willing to expose her true fears and her true desires for herself, and that in doing that, every woman left the crowning ceremony feeling, maybe for the first time, I'm not alone. Oh my gosh. You know, there were women, like, we would go to these smaller towns, and, you know, in a smaller town, there's like, well, there's, you know, the woman whose husband runs the blah, 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 and then there's the woman whose husband doesn't. And everyone got to see that no matter who they were, no matter what they did, that they were all the same. And that was what we tried to convey in the book. And I think that's what the literary agent and ultimately Harlequin saw. Did you have something you wanted to say? Because I just went.
I know.
But that sense of community, that sense of not being alone, and finally understanding that no matter, you know, I mean, someone used to say to me, well, you've been in 2 movies with Robert De Niro. What could possibly be wrong in your life? I'm like, a lot. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, and I hate to say it, but look at Sandra Bullock. If you ever thought, oh, maybe if I was thinner or prettier or richer or had an Academy Award, you know, everyone would love me or whatever. And, you know, it has, what happened with that man, her husband, had nothing to do with her. And it really doesn't matter if you're rich and thin and pretty and have an Academy Award, you know. I mean, that's his problem, but it just matters about who you are and the decisions that you make about yourself.
Absolutely. You know, we after we ask the two questions, that's really the core of the crowning ceremony, then we ask women to make a personal decree for themselves, to stand up and say, I am queen of my own life, and my first official act will be. And then they have to, you know, speak an intention for themselves. And that part of the party is really powerful. We've had women say, I decree that I am going to wake up and have chocolate for breakfast more often and not feel bad about it. Mm-hmm. To, I'm going to have more sex with my husband. Mm-hmm. To, one woman said, I'm going to quit my job and join the Peace Corps. And she did.
Wow.
Another woman said, I have been sick all my life, and my entire family knows me as Valerie the Sick. And I'm very funny. And I want to be known as Valerie the Funny. So from this day forward, I will not allow people to speak to me as though I am still sick, because I am not. I am funny. And the entire, I'm going to cry now, because what happened was the entire room stood up and applauded her for that really heartfelt statement. And they all said, we didn't know you before, so we think you're hilarious. And so now to this group of people, she's Valerie the Funny, you know?
So, again, back to the disclaimer about not being therapists. We are friends, and we've been friends for almost 35 years. And through the years, we have offered support to each other, and we've come up with these exercises, you know, for lack of a better word, but just these things that we do to help us move forward in life and be happier and be more successful. And that's why we wrote the book, because we think that one of the most important things, and it's one of the chapters in the book, is that you need to have a good friend. We think that everybody has to have someone in their life that they trust, who's watching them live, so that they can occasionally say to them, how am I doing? And know that whatever answer they get, they can trust. And that's what we did for each other. We
Yep.
watch each other's back. And in the book, we're watching your back as a woman. And that's one of the things that we wanted to offer.
We're saying that, you know, we call them ladies in waiting because there is a little theme to the book, as you may have noticed. But we say that these women that are your true friends are people who have no agenda except the best for you. And that, you know there are people in everybody's life who wouldn't be happy if you lost weight or moved away or changed jobs or went back to college, whatever. It would upset the balance and it would make them uncomfortable. So what you're looking for is that one woman, if you're lucky, or more, in your life who has no agenda. And when you say to them, what do you think? You're going to get an honest answer that's just about what's best for you and not what's best for them. And in order to have that friend, you have to be that friend. And so, you know, we really want to invite women to nurture. When you just get the inkling that you might have that kind of friend, tell them. Tell them exactly what they mean to you and be that kind of friend to them, because that's a tremendous gift to have somebody like that in your life.
And we even tell you how to do that. If you, well, there's a little graph, and if you go, oh, I don't have any friends like that, we tell you how to do that. Because I think that, you know, I come from this place of what I call below sea level, low self-esteem. And, you know, Cindy, we both grew up in Wisconsin, and we met in college. And, you know, I just didn't think that I was attractive enough or smart enough or funny enough or whatever. And I have these negative voices inside me. And I think the original voice that I had was, run, play, have fun, you know, sing. And I never even really heard that. I just did that. And somewhere along the line, and I often blame 17 Magazine, you know, I was like, oh, that's not me, that's not me, that's not me. You know, my voice morphed and it became this really negative voice that said, oh my God, you're fat and you're stupid and you're ugly and nobody likes you, and blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, I'm looking at you, but I'm hearing this voice. And And I did a lot of things to try and avoid that voice. But finally, for me, I had a moment, then we kind of call it a windy mountain moment, where I fought the Mongol horde, because that's how I think of them. And I set a kitchen timer, and I said, you've got 10 minutes, and if you could take me down, do it. And that voice was so evil. The things that it said to me that I would never let a stranger say to me, but after just a matter of minutes, it lost all its power, and it said to me that the cats didn't like me, and if I got another cat, that cat wouldn't like me either. And I said, you know what, if that's the best you can do, it's not good enough. And I need you to, if you don't have anything positive to say, say nothing at all, because that's what it's about now. It's about supporting me. And I've had this incredible grace from those negative voices. And these, we have seven gifts, you know, because when you write a book, you have to have, you know, two titles, and you have to say the seven easy this and that's and all that stuff, you know. I mean, we knew that. They told us that and everything. And we do have these seven gifts, and they're free. They're free. And you give them to yourself, and they're free. And I think that what I really wanted to say was that you already are the queen of your own life. That's the secret of the book, and I'm not trying to talk you out of buying it, because there's some really good stuff. In fact, the highest compliment that I think that we've gotten so far is that the book is valuable and accessible and really funny, and it fits in your purse. Yeah,
exactly.
And so the secret is that, and we say this at the end, you already are the queen of your own life. And sometimes you really just need the friendship that we have. You need a couple of good friends to hold up the mirror so that you can see what we already see, which is the best of you. And there's no way to screw up being queen of your own life unless you don't throw yourself a crowning celebration or a crowning party, because that's the important thing. Standing up, throwing a little event for your friends and you, where you get to declare out loud that you are the queen of your own life. Now, some women like to wear crowns, yep, and shoot off firecrackers and do all this stuff, you know. I'm not a crown wearer. Cindy likes the tiara
thing. I love the tiara.
She loves it, you know. But it's your party, and you can do whatever you want as long as you do it and pass it on. Yep. Because that's the thing, isn't it? Really?
It really is. We like to say that, you know, life really is, and you'll see the phrase here, life really is like a tapestry, only sometimes we're at the back of the tapestry with all the needles and the knots, and you're, you know, zigging and zagging and trying to keep up with everything, and every now and then you have to step around to the front and look at the sheer beauty of a life well lived, and just stand there and take it in and say, wow, I admire me. Mm-hmm. And that takes your breath away.
Because we think that we're the poster women for anything is possible. Because we're standing here right now in front of you with a couple of microphones. We've written our book. Our picture's on the back. We actually wrote the whole book. We didn't have, you know, ghostwriters or anything. I mean, we wrote the book.
And twice. So,
twice, yes.
Because the editor didn't like the first draft.
No. And, you know, here's the thing. We have a couple of things that we, besides our friendship, but within the friendship, that we hang on to. And one of them is, you don't have to be 20 to have your whole life ahead of you. And the other one is, there's always something more. There is always something more. And again, poster women, you know. And if you got anything out of what we said, or you get anything from that book, Pass it on. You know how the Dalai Lama was saying lately that it was going to be Western women that were going to save the world? Well, we believe that's true. And, you know, neither of us are going to go out and just jump into politics or buy a lot of guns and go and, you know, save a country or anything like that. But we're going to continue to be the best friends to each other that we can possibly be, the best friends to anyone in our lives, the best sisters and mothers and daughters, because when you pass that on, that sense of self-esteem to the people around you, they will pass it on, and they will pass it on. And, you know, it sounds so simple and truly Pollyanna, but we are the women who believe that Pollyanna is not a four-letter word. We believe that it's okay to see the positive, and the more that you see the positive, the more positive will come into your life. And if you pass that on, the world is ours, and that's the point.
Now, Kathy, you played one of the meanest, ugliest women on TV.
Yes, I did, Cindy. That
was actually the description for her character. Will you talk a little bit about that?
I will, in case someone was going to ask me. You know, playing Mimi was the best thing that ever happened to me, and I'm not just saying that because I saved all my money. I'm saying it because, again, I really had such low self-esteem, and I got this job, and on the script, it said the meanest, ugliest woman in the world. And someone actually said to me, I thought of you immediately. And I was like, thank you. And so I get this job, and I'm playing this woman, and the thing about Mimi was she truly believed that she was gorgeous. Gorgeous. And so I'm playing the meanest, ugliest woman in the world who believes she's gorgeous. And this great thing happened where she was so beautiful to me. And in fact, to some of the guys on the crew, too, I have to tell you, all week we'd rehearse and I'd be really plain and kind of Amish. And I'd get all that makeup on and then they'd be like, hey, how are you? And I'm like, again, the same woman I was about 10, 15 minutes ago. You know, I don't get it. But the best part of Mimi became a strong part in me, and the weakness and the low self-esteem that I had just was kind of soaked up by Mimi and made her a little more human. And it was always difficult for me to set a boundary. I was one of those women who always said yes when I really wanted to say no, and then I was filled with resentment and I hated you. And I was the one who said yes. But when I got on that show, people were trying to cross my boundaries all the time. They wanted the most bizarre things from me, and I had to get strong fast, and I did. And I would say, what would Mimi say? And then I would add the love, because I felt that was important. And I got to be, I think that I'm someone now who nothing embarrasses me, and I feel really confident about taking care of myself. And it's uncomfortable to say no, but I've learned to do it without leaving any bodies, no casualties, including myself. And that's a really, no, go ahead, you can if you want. We're giving away free stuff. And we got a cat in here that you can pet. So it was an important thing. And all the wisdom that Cindy and I have gathered in our 35 years of Midwestern friendship, including the really great gift of learning the practice of happiness, it's all here. It's easy, it's accessible, it's valuable, fits in your purse. I'm not trying to sell the book so much as I'm trying to say, wow, we're women, and it's fantastic, who have men. Look at that. We have men who are fantastic. And I know that men feel the same way. It's just we happen to be women, and we wrote the book for women. But, you know, what a great world.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.